My name is Darren Erickson, and I'm from the University of Minnesota. I'll introduce the people up here with me as we go. But we're all at Minnesota at the Alcohol Epidemiology Program. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk today about enforcement, alcohol enforcement. We did a survey, a national survey of different alcohol enforcement agencies. And so we're all going to talk on different pieces of that throughout the day. I'm going to give kind of an introduction, both just kind of a little bit of background about the project that all this data comes from and kind of put it in the context of that larger project. And then I'm also going to talk a little bit about some of the common methods, how we did the survey, some of that stuff, so that as we talk through the more substantive parts, we don't have to kind of recover that. And then we'll each kind of slice it up and talk about an area. Obviously, I don't think I need to explain kind of why we have enforcement and why it matters, but I'll very briefly talk about it. First off, we think enforcement's important, and we think that it's effective, and we have kind of a wide array of evidence to suggest so. First, we have theory suggesting that it's important. Kind of the work, we're approaching this kind of within the context of deterrence theory, and that kind of guides a lot of our history of enforcement. And as you all know, the three S's, certainty, swiftness, and severity, it says that if we perceive that our actions may result in a penalty and that's certain and swift and severe, that will somehow have an effect on our behavior and lower our likelihood of engaging in that. It's kind of a cost-benefit analysis that we go through. There's also certainly plenty of anecdotal evidence that enforcement works. I know personally, if I think there's a greater chance that as I'm driving along that I may get a speeding ticket, I'm much more likely to follow the posted limit. Whereas if maybe I think I'm not likely to get caught, I may kind of step it up a little bit. And certainly there's a wealth of empirical data. And again, we can look both within alcohol, but really more broadly than that. One of the things that I think is a really great testament to how enforcement works from an empirical data perspective is when we had seatbelt law changes. And as you know, many of the states, when they enacted seatbelt laws, they made it a secondary enforcement issue. And that says that the only reason that someone, the only way you can get caught not wearing your seatbelt is if you're pulled over for some other reason. So the police cannot actually pull you over just because you're not wearing your seatbelt. And there were a lot of reasons why they did that. And then a number of other states said, no, in fact, you can be pulled over just for not having your seatbelt on. And over time, many of the states that started out as secondary have switched over to primary enforcement. And the data are pretty compelling that when a state has primary enforcement or transitioned from secondary to primary, the rates of seatbelt compliance went up pretty dramatically. And it's somewhere in that range of 10 to 20% higher rates of seatbelt compliance. And also lower rates of fatalities. Obviously, there's a pretty big literature as well around speed limits and enforcement on those. So enforcement matters. We think enforcement works. The main issue for us is that there's kind of a knowledge gap in terms of we don't really know that much about alcohol enforcement. There's been a lot of studies done looking at aspects of alcohol enforcement, but I would say that there's a lot of things we still don't know. And that was part of the impetus for what we're doing in this study. As I said, this is part of a larger study that we call affectionately the APIS grant, and it was awarded to me and my three colleagues at the University of Minnesota, and we're in the fourth year of this project. This is a bigger project, and here are the aims of that project. Today we're going to focus specifically on the enforcement aspect, but the bigger project in general was to look at, one, can we measure the state-level alcohol policy environment? Can we look for patterns? For instance, can we find states that have kind of a wetter or more lax alcohol policy environment? Can we find states that have a stricter alcohol policy environment and come up with kind of a new way of measuring that? And then can we see if that pattern is related to a number of different outcomes, mortality, traffic, et cetera? The piece that we really wanted to focus on and not lose sight of was looking at how enforcement fits into that picture, that policy and outcome picture. And this is our conceptual model that kind of guides this project. And as you can see, we think policies over here are associated with differences in alcohol use and that that's associated with different rates of problems. But this, we know that enforcement plays some role in this. And we kind of punted here in that we kind of threw all the different arrows in, and we think enforcement may be operating as a moderator, but it could also be operating as a mediator. For instance, as a moderator, it may be that when you compare two different states with the exact same policy environment, the one that has higher levels of enforcement is going to see lower levels of use and problems than the one with lower enforcement. So it's moderating that relationship either here or here. Also, maybe it's mediating. Having a strong policy environment leads to stronger enforcement, and that accounts for that link between policy and our outcomes. So in order to get at that one piece, we did this national survey of local law enforcement agencies. I just want to give you a little bit of a quick background on that so that, again, we're all going to report on the same data. For the local level enforcement, we surveyed municipal police and county sheriffs in all 50 states. We also looked at state level enforcement. We did all the 50 states, ABC agencies, as well as Highway Patrol. For the local law enforcement, obviously we needed to sample. We got a list from DOJ. There are about 15,000 plus local law enforcement agencies across the United States. We did a pretty, a somewhat complex way of trying to figure out how to do this sample. We stratified by the number of agencies in a state, large states with a lot of agencies, states with fewer agencies. Then within each state, we tried to think about agencies as being large agencies and small agencies. We stratified by both of those. And then to get at the local versus the county, we used the proportion. I have a little graph here that probably doesn't really clear it up, so I apologize. But we split states basically into the 50 smaller states and the 25 smaller states and the 25 larger states. And then within each of those, we identified small agencies and large agencies. And then we took a sample of each. So within the small states, we targeted 20 agencies in that state. And within the large states, we tried to get 40. And then, because we were concerned about missing those big metropolitan areas that account for a lot of the population, we forced in the three largest municipalities in each state. Not the 150 largest municipalities in the U.S., but the three largest in each state. So for instance, in North Dakota, they were Fargo and two other cities that I don't know what they are. All said and done, we had our list of 1,600 plus agencies. This is a map showing a dot for all the different ones that we included in our sample. And so as you can see, they're spread out across the entire of the U.S. And you can kind of see that the smaller states have fewer dots than the larger states. We did a census for all the state level things. So for the ABCs, we did a full census. We got that list. There's actually 56 because a few of our bigger states have regional agencies. And the same thing with Highway Patrol. We tried to get a census of all 50 states. And again, in Hawaii, they have four county levels. So we have an N slightly bigger than 53. Response rates. For our local, we got a 66% response rate. We were also concerned of, since we were going to try to come up with state-level measures, that we had adequate response rate at the state level. So when you look at our state level, our minimum response rate was 50, so we felt comfortable with that. We got really good response for our ABC and our Highway Patrol. This is a map. I'm not sure if it actually shows up or not, but here I actually have two different colored dots. The green ones were the agencies that actually responded to our survey, and the red ones were the non-responders. And again, what we're hoping for is that we have a pretty good representation of agencies across the U.S. So let me talk real briefly about the data that we're all going to end up presenting on. In the survey, we obviously asked about all the basic agency characteristics, the size, number of officers, those types of things. We got our community characteristics data based on Census 2010. And again, population, some racial, ethnic, those types of things. The main part of the survey was asking about enforcement activities of these law enforcement agencies. And within each of these categories, compliance checks, over service, we have multiple items. So for instance, and you'll hear more about them in the talk today, but for compliance checks, starting off, did you do compliance checks in the past year? And then if they answer yes, there may be 6 or 8 or 10 follow-up questions. How often? Who do you do? Different venues, stadiums, etc. Same thing with all these other ones. Usually a basic question asking, do you do them? And then follow-ups if you do about the pattern, etc. At the end of the survey, we asked just some kind of general things about their community and alcohol specifically in their community. We asked them about problems in their community, their kind of self-rated problems in these communities around alcohol use, etc., drinking, driving. We asked them about their resources and priorities that they commit to alcohol problems in their community. And then finally, we asked a few questions about how they collaborate with media. So today's talk, we have four different presentations. I'm going to talk first. I'm talking now, but I'm going to kind of switch from moderator to talker. I'm going to talk about priorities and resources and talk about how those relate and kind of how they vary across agencies in some different types. Next, Tracy Toomey is going to talk about compliance checks and what we found out, looking mostly at state, but also some state and local law enforcement agencies around a bunch of stuff around compliance checks. Third, Rhonda is going to talk about adult provision of alcohol and enforcement efforts related to that. And then finally, Tobin Nelson is going to talk about drinking and driving enforcement. This is kind of like, I think of it like our relay team, right? So I start with a baton and I'll pass it off. Because you have to have four people on a relay team, we actually have a fifth talk, but they wouldn't let us have it because no one has a 5x1 relay team. So Kath Link, one of our esteemed colleagues, is going to give her presentation on Wednesday in a great session happening on Wednesday afternoon. And that she's going to cover using the same exact data, enforcement around sales to obviously intoxicated patrons. So I encourage you to attend that talk as well if you're in town. Okay, so with that said, I'm going to first talk about resources and priorities. Obviously, we all understand that resources are limited. That's no more apparent than nowadays. And law enforcement, clearly, when you talk with them, it's always that balance between doing the most with what we have and trying to figure out what we can get done with what we have, unfortunately. And so our main goal was trying to figure out how they've tried to prioritize and some of the things that they go into prioritizing. We ask a few questions. So our research questions about this were, one, how do the priorities and resources compare in these three broad enforcement areas, underage consumption, over-service, and drinking and driving? How are these three different priorities and resources related to each other? Are they positively correlated with each other? Are they negatively correlated with each other? And then third, are there specific patterns? And I'll explain that as I go. So again, I'm using that local law enforcement data here. My N is 1082. The resources question. In the past year, what percentage of your total annual law enforcement resources were devoted to working on enforcing laws, underage drinking? And they could go, these were the categories we gave them, 0, 1 to 4%, 5 to 10. We asked the same question on over-service and the same question on drinking and driving with the exact same response options. Priorities, relative to other law enforcement issues, how big of a priority is enforcement of underage drinking laws? And again, on this one, we went kind of with a Likert style scale, very low to very high, 0 to 4. And then again, same question for over-service, same question for drinking and driving laws. So that's primarily what I'm going to talk about here. Let's jump right into the data. Here's the just the overall means across these different ones. I've ordered them from lowest to highest. So obviously, the first thing here is that the drink driving resources for local law enforcement agencies was the highest. Over service was the lowest. And that same pattern holds pretty much for priorities. It's a little bit not quite as big of a drop from drink driving to underage in terms of priorities that we see here. But it's clear for local law enforcement agencies that they're throwing the most resources at drink driving enforcement, and they're prioritizing drink driving enforcement. Underage, pretty high. Over service, unfortunately, not quite so high. That will be a recurring theme. As I said, we wanted to really try to get at those patterns. So what are can I look at an agency and say this is an agency that has that devotes resources and priorities to this, but not to this? This is an agency that prioritizes these two, but not this one. And so I did some latent class models to do that. we don't, when I think about latent class models, I think about clustering people. So for instance, we sometimes look at how people use different types of substances. And so I might ask people about alcohol use, tobacco use, marijuana use, cocaine, opiates, narcotics, all those different things. And then I'll LCA them, and I might find a big class of people that are abstainers. They don't use anything. I might find a class of people that use tobacco but nothing else. I might find a class of people that use alcohol and marijuana but nothing else. And so we try to basically put people into some small number of classes or clusters, and that's what we're doing. I'm doing the same thing here, but I'm trying to classify these local law enforcement agencies. So it's slightly different than what we normally think of. The process is pretty straightforward. I estimate a bunch of different class models with different classes. I use a bunch of criteria to try to figure out which one I think is the best. Some of those are statistical, some of those are theoretical. And then I try to put some label on those class, abstainer, drinker, polydrug user, etc. And then once I have people in their classes, I can try to see if there are differences across them. So I did that with our data, ran a bunch of different models. We ended up thinking that a four-class solution fit best. Top row here is the percentage of our agencies that fell into each class. So, and I've ordered them roughly from the class that has the most priorities and resources to the class with the fewest. And here are the six items that I use. I actually think it's much easier to see this if I plot them, and you can kind of see what they look like. So class one, 8% of the agencies, they had pretty high drink driving resources and priority, pretty high underage, and decent over-service resources and priorities. 8% of our local law enforcement agencies fell into that light blue line. Second, class two, we had 38% of them fall into it. You know, it's a pretty similar pattern. I don't know if you sometimes can read too much into these, but maybe they're a little bit lower on the resources. They don't maybe have quite the resources as that big that top class, but they actually have a pretty high priority. So maybe lacking a few of the resources of that first class, but still placing a high priority really across all three different areas. Third class, the biggest class, 42%, clearly, they look exactly like class two in terms of how they devote resources and prioritize drink driving and underage, and virtually no resources to overservice. And then finally, our fourth class, drunk driving, lower level, but some resources and priority to drunk driving, and really nothing to either underage or overservice. And that was 12%. So, we got a little something going on here, and it looks like we can put agencies into at least a few different classes, then try to figure out, so are there differences between these four classes? And can we try to get a handle on what might be explaining, what might be associated with some of these differences? I'm not going to give you any p-values because, it's multiple degree freedom and I'm not in a multivariate, so I'm just going to show you the table of the percentages. A couple things kind of stick out. This full-time officer, this basically we asked the agency, do you have an officer who is full-time devoted to alcohol enforcement? And as you can see, they're ordered again from the one that has the highest resources across all three to the lowest. And it looks like there's a pretty good kind of gradient there. Whereas those that are in the higher classes are much more likely to have a full-time officer than particularly the one in that fourth class. A couple more, we see here that for the drink driving, these issues ask, how common is this in your community? So how common is drink driving in your community? How common is underage drinking? And again, what we see, at least what jumps out at me, is that almost all of the agencies are saying drink driving and underage are common in our community, unfortunately. But again, that fourth class, that one that really didn't devote resources to underage and overservice, they were the ones that were at least a little bit likely to say that maybe it's not such a problem. And again, when we look at overservice, remember these were the two classes that are not devoting resources or priorities to overservice, and at least eyeballing it, it looks like maybe there's something going on there, that maybe it's their perception of this is not a problem in our community, and that's maybe what's associated with devoting the resources and prioritizing overservice enforcement. Okay, so I know I'm going fast, but we got a lot to get through. Just a quick summary. So again, it looks to me that the resources and priorities correlate pretty highly with each other. And in some ways, maybe, I actually ran the correlation and it is very high. When I think about their level in the community, when you look out at local law enforcement agency, it definitely seems like drink driving enforcement is the highest and over-service is the lowest. There is variability across these agencies. And if I start thinking about what might be, a lot of the goal of this, right, is to figure out how can we get out there and intervene? What's going on out there in terms of trying to increase resources and priorities? It looks to me like having a full-time alcohol officer tends to be associated. In some ways, this seems a little bit circular, right? I'm not going to have a full-time officer, alcohol-devoted officer, if I don't have the resources and I don't prioritize it. So it maybe in some ways it's just a different way of saying it. And maybe that there's something going on in that problem perception, and that if you don't believe you have a problem with this in your community, you're not going to devote the prioritize that enforcement. We got a few next steps, obviously, running multivariate models, trying to figure out how these things all fit together. And then, obviously, the ultimate thing would be to figure out how these agencies that fall into these different classes might actually vary in terms of the enforcement activities that they're actually doing. Right. Okay, with that said, I will hand it over to Tracy Toomey. Thank you. Thanks, Dave.